KALW.
Here in the Bay Area, lots of folks go into significant debt just to maintain their housing. So the vouchers provide meaningful assistance for folks in all kinds of situations.
For the first time in a long time, applications are open for Oakland's Section 8 housing.
The Oakland Housing Authority says they got more than 20,000 applications in the first 10 days, and they're only opening up 5,000 spots on the wait list.
Chasing the white whale of rental assistance, then cheesemaking inspired by classical music.
This is my temple. This is my prayer. I'm still fascinated by this whole process.
And we'll get a little preview of what's to come with our newest season of Uncuffed.
You'll hear from our newest producers at the California Institute for Women.
Hey, we're here.
That's coming up. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Section 8 is a federally funded program that provides financial assistance to low-income renters. And for the first time in 14 years, Oakland's Housing Authority is accepting applications. A Section 8 housing voucher is one of the most sought-after types of rental assistance in the country, and the process to apply isn't straightforward. The application deadline is this coming Sunday, January 26th. To walk us through the process, KALW's Hana Baba sat down with our homelessness beat reporter, Alistair Boone, to talk about what applicants can expect.
Hey, Alistair.
Hey, Hana.
So first, can you just remind us what Section 8 vouchers actually do?
Yeah, so Section 8, or also known as housing choice vouchers, are kind of like the white whale of rental assistance. Everybody wants one, but they're really difficult to get. Basically, they're vouchers from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, that are distributed through local housing authorities around the country. Mm-hmm. So they guarantee the federal government will pay the majority of your rent. And one of the reasons they're so popular is that the barrier is pretty low. They scan for a few things. You have to be a U.S. citizen or permanent resident, and they look into your basic rental and criminal histories. But the bar is fairly low. You basically just have to meet the income eligibility requirements.
Okay. And what are those income requirements?
You have to make 50% of the area median income or less, which in Alameda County is about $55,000 for a single person or $78,000 for a family of four annually.
Okay.
And you need to be willing to contribute 30 to 40% of your monthly income to rent and utilities. But it doesn't matter how low your income is. If you don't earn anything, your payment will just be $0 a month. So this makes it a pretty wide spectrum of folks who apply for the vouchers. Some people are using them to get off the street, but a lot of people are really just struggling to pay rent. Here in the Bay Area, lots of folks go into significant debt just to maintain their housing. So the vouchers provide meaningful assistance for folks in all kinds of situations.
Right, right. So basically, all you have to do is contribute 30 to 40% of your income, and then the government pays the rest?
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is one of the things that makes Section 8 so appealing. HUD is committing to pay the majority of your rent in the location of your choosing.
Okay.
So right now, with the Oakland waitlist opening, you don't even have to live in Oakland already to apply. You just have to use it to rent a place somewhere in Oakland, at least for the first year, and then you can actually apply to move with your voucher anywhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
The voucher is basically just money. It's not a housing placement. It's up to the tenant to find their own place on the rental market, which is different from a lot of the other rental assistance programs because it gives folks the flexibility to find a place that works for them.
Right. So how do you get one of these? It sounds like it's almost too good to be true.
Yeah, I mean, the need is just so high. Applications have been open since January 7th, and the Oakland Housing Authority says they got more than 20,000 applications in the first 10 days, and they're only opening up 5,000 spots on the wait list.
So for people who want to apply before the 26th, what is that process like? What can they expect?
The application process itself is pretty simple because they're trying to make the bar as low as possible. The questions are basically just about your income, your citizenship status, and your contact information, stuff like that.
Mm.
There are two preferences. The Housing Authority tries to give a little more weight to applications from families with children and OUSD schools and to applications from veterans, but ultimately everyone is selected through a lottery.
Okay.
Yeah, so everyone who applies between now and the 26th will be thrown into a lottery for a spot on the wait list, and then folks will hear within 120 days whether they got a spot on the wait list, and they'll also know their place on the list, whether they're number 5,000 or number one.
Okay, and so if you are one of the lucky ones to get a voucher, what happens next?
It's a long game. The last time they opened up the wait list was in 2011 in Oakland, and it took them 14 years to get through
14 years?
14 years. So for some people, yeah, the process of actually getting a voucher takes years. But the people I talked to stressed that the best way to make sure you're still on track is to be reachable throughout your time on the wait list, so that when you get to the top and they reach out to say, congratulations, you got a voucher, you can actually claim that voucher.
Okay.
And this can be tough, especially because the wait can be so long. Sometimes people just don't get the letter or the call.
Right.
Like they get sick and they're in the hospital or they lose their phone. So if you're planning to apply, just everyone I spoke to recommended, make sure to put some thought into how the Housing Authority will be able to reach you. So if you don't have a mailing address, think about someone in your network who can collect your mail for you, or setting up an email address so that you can get access to those notifications for the next few years and make sure to stay on top of checking it.
I mean, Alistair, just these numbers, 14 years, it just feels like a system is broken. Was it always like this?
You know, the vouchers are distributed to local housing authorities through HUD, and there's a finite number of vouchers. So even right now, Oakland opening up 5,000 spots on the wait list, that doesn't mean that there are 5,000 new vouchers in the pool. It's just that 5,000 people have kind of moved on from needing Section 8 assistance. So it's definitely getting worse as the need for rental assistance is greater, because in order to get a voucher, you need to wait until someone who's currently using one graduates from the program.
What does that mean to graduate from the program? Do people, like, how long do people stay?
I mean, it really depends on the person and their situation. So attrition happens because either your income becomes too high to continue qualifying for the program, which does happen for some people, or you move into like an assisted living facility with age or a family member's house, or you pass away. So it's really a variety of situations. Those are just a few examples. But you can imagine that as the housing crisis keeps getting worse and worse in the Bay Area, folks really hang on to their vouchers and aren't really able to continue earning income to the extent that they wouldn't qualify for a voucher anymore. So you're on the wait list and you're waiting for a voucher to come up, but it can really be a long time because the people who use those are really relying on them.
Okay, so let's say you actually get a voucher. So what happens next? You just start looking for a place on Craigslist or whatever?
Yeah, basically. But this can be tricky, too, because the rental market is just so competitive for everyone in California, and Section 8 folks are just competing with everyone else in the rental pool. So finding a place can be pretty challenging, especially because some landlords refuse to take housing vouchers.
Isn't that illegal?
Yes, definitely it's illegal, but still it's not uncommon to see listings that just blatantly say they don't accept Section 8. But the Oakland Housing Authority has put a lot of work into combating this discrimination. They have a bunch of incentives for property owners to take Section 8 tenants, including guaranteeing that they will pay the security deposit so tenants don't have to. And the Housing Authority is also willing to pay for certain capital improvements and give bonuses for landlords who sign new rental contracts. So it can actually be pretty good for landlords. The government is guaranteeing that the rent will be paid, right?
Right.
So even if the tenant loses their job and can't pay anything at all, the government will always pay forever as long as the tenant qualifies to stay in the program.
Lots of great info. If folks need help applying, where can they go?
People can apply independently from their computer or their phone. The process is pretty simple if using those technologies works for you. But if you want some assistance, the Oakland Housing Authority offers in-person assistance with applications at their offices, as well as at certain branches of the Oakland Public Library. All the info about that can be found on the homepage of their website, oakha.org.
All right, and we'll have a link at klw.org/crosscurrents. Thanks, Alistair.
Thanks, Sanaa.
That was Alistair Boone, our fellow covering homelessness in conversation with KALW's Hannah Baba. Application for Oakland Section 8 housing vouchers are being accepted through Sunday, January 26th. We'll have a link at kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Sine Khalid in for Hannah Baba. When it's done right, cheese making is a slow, intricate process with delicate steps unique to each type. For one maker, the craft is joyfully inspired by classical music. Next up, KALW's Lisa Morehouse takes us to a cheese temple with a story from her series, California Foodways.
So Young Scanlon never thought she'd be a cheesemaker. In fact, cheese wasn't even part of her early life.
I didn't eat cheese until maybe I was like 18 or 19 because cheese was not available. You know, from U.S. Army, we could get processed cheese. Kraft singles, that yellow plastic-looking thing.
She was born in Seoul in the late 60s. Both her parents had experienced the Japanese occupation, the Korean War. It was music that brought them together.
The only place there was piano was the churches. So the way my father met my mom was he was playing Chopin. And my mom walked into the church, and they fell in love.
Growing up, she says, the house had no refrigeration, but it did have a garden and lots of music. Her father was her first piano teacher.
So I learned how to read music before I learned alphabet.
He taught her pieces like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and all of its variations by Mozart. Soyoung studied chemical engineering, got a graduate degree in biotechnology, and worked in a cancer research center. She came to the U.S. to get a PhD in molecular biology. Her first week in Boston, she went to the symphony and ended up sitting next to the man who would become her husband. The couple went on a trip to France and rented a farmhouse. They took a fateful visit to a farmer's market where Soyoung met a cheesemonger who gave her a perfectly ripe piece of goat cheese from the hill town of Rocamadour.
And it was like almost melting on my hand. It was like ice cream. And I could feel it started like almost like oozing out, almost like a drink. And that was incredible.
A delicate rind with an almost liquid center.
That was the first goat milk cheese in my life. And it had so much flavor. And I said, I need to go to the place where it was made. Because I think I can actually taste the rocks and the air and something very dry. I can taste it.
They spent a day driving to Rocamadour, where she says the rocks and the hills and the air did smell like that cheese she'd tasted.
And I was like, oh gosh, you know, milk has some kind of a character, can be transformed like this. And after that, I said like, wow. I started thinking about the power of milk.
She read hundreds of books and articles about milk's biophysical properties, about its history. In the late 1990s, now living in Northern California, she met other cheese obsessives and started making what she called mélange, a cheese made of milk from both goats and cows. And she found it fulfilled her scientifically curious mind more than life in a lab.
But I had no clue if it is good or not.
She took a few pieces to Napa County's Oakville Grocery, the gourmet store of the time. And people there shared it with folks who worked at the revered French Laundry restaurant. Soyoung was invited to prepare a tasting for Chef Thomas Keller.
Gosh, that was the first time I walk into the restaurant kitchen being in front of this, like, very famous chef. I was shaking.
The kitchen buzzed with activity.
The prep tables were full of salmon, like lamb, and, you know, they were just dressing lamb, and it was just full.
But when the chef announced it was time for a cheese tasting...
Yes, chef. Everything got cleaned out.
They removed food from the prep table, put out a tablecloth, serving plates, and formal utensils.
And they all took off their aprons, dirty aprons. They put their chef's jacket on.
She presented Thomas Keller with a tiny box holding only 6 pieces of cheese as his staff watched.
They were standing, holding their breath.
He tasted, smiled, and walked away from the table. Everyone else in the kitchen knew that meant he liked it.
And they serve my cheese every day, ever since.
It was only after that day that Soyoung named her company Andante and decided to give each cheese a musical name. Soyoung says sometimes an aspect of the cheese makes her think of the musical inspiration for its name. Sometimes she has music on her mind and decides to create a compatible cheese. One of her first was Nocturne, a blue-gray, ash-covered, truncated pyramid inspired by Chopin's composition meant to be played at dusk. There's Minuet, a triple cream goat's milk cheese finished with a cow's milk creme fraiche. Soyoung created it to be eaten while sipping champagne.
I wanted to do something pretty and elegant, like, you know, the dance minuet.
Her cheese, called Piccolo, is appropriately tiny. Even though Largo is made from the same curd, it's 4 times the size and ages so long that it develops a deep flavor. Cheese making is hard on the body, and Soyoung knows she can't do this forever. But she still has cheeses she wants to make, inspired by music. Like rubato, the tempo mark for forgotten time.
You are free from any directions.
She says she likes the metaphor. If she could put aside the commercial time pressures of orders and budgets.
How wonderful it can be if I can forget the time while I'm making.
And just help the cheese become what it's meant to be in its own time. Given the huge role music plays in Soyoung's life, I was kind of surprised when I visited Andante Dairy. There was no music playing.
I have very, very sensitive hearing. And so sometimes when it is a little bit too much, it interferes in my brain.
So this small workspace is quiet. No pumps, only the buzzing of a paddle spinning in a vat of milk. It's sourced from the goats grazing on the rolling hills just outside the door. Soyoung monitors the temperature carefully and adds milk by hand. Letting the milk in the vat agitate for a bit, Soyoung moves to a cheese press where rounds of her newest cheese, Balade, have been squeezed overnight.
So these are the hard cheeses I made yesterday, and now they need to be turned and set aside.
She reaches up to the press to bring down the molds, then removes the 5-inch discs from their cheesecloth wrappers, flips each round, and puts it back in the mold for more even pressing. She'll finish the rind with pomegranate molasses, inspired by the tree outside the window. So-young is just over 5 feet tall. Every waist-high bucket of milk is on wheels. Every work table is on casters so that the tiny cheesemaker can move them herself. She scoops the slow-curdled cow's milk into cheesecloth bags nestled in a draining tray. It looks to me like a trough. Now I have a better idea of why there are so few distractions here. So-young's sensitivities help her tune into the cheese. There's the feel when she scoops.
You know, the weight, the density when I scoop up, I know that, wow, this milk is really thick.
And the smell?
You can smell that hint of goat milk coming. It's very different from cow's milk.
She says if cow's milk was cotton, goat's milk would be Irish linen, a bit finer. Of course, for someone with a highly trained ear, there's the sound.
The sound tells you so much because the sound of curd falling into the bag, it actually tells you how much is solid in the milk.
When she's working, the only music So-young needs is the sound of the whey draining out of the cheesecloth.
This is my temple. Yep.
And the cheese she makes?
It's my prayer. I'm still fascinated by this whole process. It's just like magic.
This piece was reported and produced by KALW's Lisa Morehouse in collaboration with the Food and Environment Reporting Network with the support from Cal Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. You can listen to more stories in the series by subscribing to Lisa's podcast, California Foodways. This is Cross Currents. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hannah Baba. KALW's award-winning podcast, Uncuffed, empowers people in prison to tell their own stories. And here's a little good news. Uncuffed is back with its newest season, bringing you stories from San Quentin Rehabilitation Center and Solano State Prison. And for the first time ever, the show will include voices from a women's prison. Here's a glimpse of what's in store.
This is Uncuffed,
the podcast that empowers people in prison to tell their own stories.
And we're back for a brand new season, y'all.
We're going to take you into the past and look at a decade that was huge for a lot of us in here.
Now you know why young black men were rioting after that Rodney King. You know how that feels now.
You'll hear stories from our childhood, how we made it work when things got tough at home.
It started raining, then, you know, it gets cold, and that's when I saw the big trees, a weeping willow. That's when I was like, well, I'm going to try to see if I can make one up here.
And we'll bring you into the present, sharing our stories from in prison right now.
I don't feel as locked up until I go to the chow hall. And that's when I'm in this long line, like hurtling into this one doorway like we're cattle.
California prisons are changing, so we'll take you inside and talk about what we're seeing firsthand.
Just because you don't call me inmate doesn't mean I don't know my consequences and what I'm in prison for, right? All it is a title.
This season, for the first time ever, women will be taking the mic. You'll hear from our newest producers at the California Institute for Women.
Hey, we're here. CIW's in the house.
It's the ladies' turn. We got stories.
And we'll check in with some of the OG Uncuffed crew who've come home.
My name is Tim Hicks, and I'm making me a nice, juicy hamburger with some cheese. And this is my moment of freedom.
And we've got a big surprise for you. But you're just going to have to listen to our new season to find out what's in store.
Our season launches January 30th. Don't miss it.
And it's going to be good.
Woo, you better know it. We about to let y'all have it.
You got to love it.
Woo.
Tune in.
We're so excited for this new season. Subscribe to Uncuffed in your favorite podcast player, or we'll have a link at kalw.org/crosscurrents. Now, before we go, let's listen to some new music from a local band. This is San Francisco's Things Lucky. They're playing tonight at Horsey's Saloon in their hometown. The Cross Currents team includes Eliza Pepple, Jan Ramirez, Clara Camundi, James Rollins, Gonady Joe Johnson, Truk Nguyen, Victor Tentz, Molly Blair Salyer, Shireen Adel, Anisha Harjani, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Hana Baba, and Ben Shrefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.